Well, good morning, everybody. I didn't get a chance to properly introduce myself there earlier. I apologize for that. My name is Kyle. I've been called the thinking man's Brian's home. You could go with that if you want to. Best part of that joke is he has a master's degree and I don't. So joke's actually on me there. What are you going to do about it, you know? We're in this vision series, like I said, and we're doing this for a reason. Two of them, actually. One, there's a lot of new people here. We're up over 20% in growth in sites, which is incredible. New people year over year. We're up 80% in viewers online. So just a lot of people. Welcome. Welcome. We don't want it to take years for you to figure out who we are and what we're actually about. And then for the veterans of us around, we're just overdue for a refresher on the stuff that matters and how we apply it here. Now, none of the things you'll hear in this vision series are unique to Crossroads, in that these are all things that God calls all believers to do with any church they're a part of. So the warning might be if you get through this series and you're like, that's what Crossroads is about? No, thank you. Totally cool. Find some other community to do these things with. They are not optional. This series is about how we apply them here and what they mean to us. Now, this is also not a commercial. It might seem that way to you. Not a commercial. This is the why behind every commercial you'll see at Crossroads. And the why is because our Father, the King, asked that simple question, whom shall I send and who will go for us? It's a question I've been asking a lot more in my house ever since we got our puppy. I ask this question all the time. Puppy needs to go out. At first, we were like, well, the problem is we don't know when the puppy needs to go out. And so we solved that one by getting a doggy doorbell. Have you seen this? It's like a little hockey puck you glue on the wall. And then she just kind of goes up. She hits her nose on it and goes, bing, bong. You know, and then she just waits for someone to let her out. Do you know how many times a day a dog wants to go out? 1,000, maybe more. I don't know. How many times are there in a day? All those times. And so this common scene now in my house is Annie goes to the doorbell and she rings it and goes, bing, bong. And then silence happens. And if you've never been to my house, you don't know this. My house is not quiet. It's like a frat party. But the little bing, bong happens and all of a sudden it's a Zen garden. Serenity. You can't find anybody. Enya starts playing. Sail away, sail away. You know, it's like quiet, calm. And I'm just there like, who will go for me and whom shall I send? And none of my kids answer. That's it. Now, my kids don't answer probably because they don't view me as their father, the king. I don't talk about my kingdom enough is probably my problem. Jesus made sure we understood his father was a king. He talked about his dad's kingdom all of the time. In fact, the topic that Jesus talked about the most, more than anything, is the kingdom. The gospel writers actually summarized all of his teachings, all of his thoughts, all of his worldview, all of his theology, all his perspectives as the gospel of the kingdom. Matthew 4:23 says, and Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease among the kingdom. The gospel of the kingdom. When he taught that prayer, the Lord's Prayer, that's where that music comes from, by the way, is the Lord's Prayer. He said, pray this way. Pray, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. May your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. It seems like this whole thing, our Father the King, what he's after is to have his kingdom come here, like now. Well, what would that look like? How would you know if the kingdom had arrived? How would you know? Would it be like all-night worship services? Would the preaching at every church suddenly become way amazing, way better than any of us here? Like, prayer? How would you know? Well, the answer in the Bible is really clear. All those things are great, but the answer isn't any of those things. See, the sign of the coming of the kingdom of God, the sign of its arrival, is that the poor, the oppressed are taken care of. The stranger is taken in. The widow is cared for. The orphan is adopted. Its physical needs are met. Did you catch that when Jesus went and he was preaching that gospel? Matthew says he went into all the towns and he would heal sickness and disease. Jesus, who I think we tend to think about through this like elevated spiritual lens, which yes, he's God. Yes, elevated. Yes, spiritual. But we tend to miss the physical helper part of it. He never showed up in a town and preached the gospel without meeting physical needs. His mission statement, by the way, is to come to the poor, the oppressed, and the needy. That's specifically who he came to. When he got baptized, he came out of the water, he goes into the wilderness, he gets tempted. This is the very beginning of his ministry. He's in the wilderness, he gets tempted for 40 days. Maybe you've heard some of those stories. Right after that, what he does is he leaves the wilderness and he goes to his hometown of Nazareth. He walks into the synagogue and he goes to the attendant. He says, "Hey, will you get me the scroll of Isaiah, the one where he says, God says, you know, who will go for me? Whom shall I send? Give me that one off the shelf. Give me that one." So the attendant grabs it and gives it to Jesus. They roll it across a stone table, and Jesus starts rolling it out. And eventually he finds what we now know as Isaiah 61, and he reads these words as his mission statement. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord." He says this, he looks around at everybody, he goes, "Today, this is fulfilled in your hearing." Mic drop, walks out. This is who I am. This is what I came to do, to preach the gospel to the poor, to heal the brokenhearted, to give liberty to the captives. See, if you want to follow Jesus, if you want to follow Jesus, you better get used to being around poor, oppressed, and needy people. You better get used to it. In another place, Jesus said, "The poor will be with you always." And some people have taken this to say, well, that's actually a reason why we don't need to meet physical needs, Kyle. We don't need to meet physical needs because we'll always have them. And so why would you ever fight a losing battle? But that's not what Jesus was saying. See, Jesus was saying the poor will be with you always. Why? Because I'll always be with the poor. And so if you're following me, guess where you're going to be? Around poor, oppressed, and needy people. It's a mission that he got and he passed on to us. See, whether or not you know it today, your life has a call. And I would even say your king has a demand of your life. It's that you would advance his kingdom. And what that might look like is being around poor, oppressed, and needy people and meeting all of their needs. Matthew 28, Jesus gave us this in many different places. It shows up in many different places. This is one of the most famous, known as the Great Commission. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." That's what he just said. What authority? To preach the gospel to the poor. "Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations." Go. Go was one of Jesus' favorite words. He said it all the time. He's always like, "Hey, go over here and go over there and go take care of this person, go to this town, go to this thing." Always saying go. If you do a search for Jesus and go, you'll find more than 100 results. You can read through them all yourself and just see him. Jesus and go, 100 results. On the other side, if you search for Jesus and stay, you will find exactly 4 results. 4. And all of them sound basically like this. This is Luke 12:35. Jesus said, "Stay. Dressed for action. Keep your lamps burning." Dressed for action. This would be a problem for me. I sleep in my underwear. This might be TMI. Not dressed for action. Brian sleeps naked. That's even more than you wanted to know. Now you know. I don't know why. Just felt like I needed to tell you. Jesus says, "Don't do that." You know, here we're just all sinners. That's what we've always said. We're not perfect people. We're sinners. All of us. No, Jesus says go. He never says stay. He says go. So my question is this. Why is it then that we think the Christian life is meant to be static and boring and safe? Why do we think that? This is how it seemed to me as a kid. I grew up in and around church. I remember being 7 years old and service had ended. It lasted what felt like 17 hours of just, you know, boring hymn after boring. It was just awful. And finally, church ends. We're out in the lobby. And then my parents decided to start talking to other people. And they're talking and talking. And 7-year-old Kyle, who has undiagnosed ADHD, does not do well in these situations. So I'm like, I want to go home. This is so boring. And then I see it. Salvation. It's a little red square in the wall, about this big. And it has one word on it in white letters. P-U-L-L. And a handle. Have you seen these? They're everywhere. I had never noticed they were everywhere. I was like, that's it. And then the voice of God called to me from the red box. And it said, "Try it." And I was like, yes. So I went over and I pulled. And the lights went off and the sirens went and the fire trucks showed up. And everyone starts running around. And to be honest, I was shocked at how awesome it was. like better than I could have imagined. It delivered. Now, funny thing, no adult said thank you. It's like, I fixed the boringness. No adult said thank you. I now know it costs lots of money. Please don't pull our fire alarms. It costs so much money when the fire truck, don't do that. I didn't know that then. I just knew all the adults were angry at me. And that's the moment I figured out, you know what? I'm probably not getting into heaven. Probably not gonna happen for me. But I was pretty okay with it. Why? Because heaven seemed just as boring as church. It's like, oh yeah, it's gonna be awesome, Kyle. One day, you're gonna go up into heaven and you'll sit on clouds and angels will have harps and sing hymns and you'll sing with them forever. And I was like, how do I not go there? That's not great, you know? It's not great. And I would say if that's your picture of heaven, I don't have time to talk about it. That's not what heaven is like in the Bible. If that's your picture, it's not what it's like. I don't have time to talk about it. The point is, churches, I think, have a really bad habit. I might even say a pattern of something that borders on sin. If we keep making the Christian life seem like it's supposed to be static, safe, and boring, and it's not. If your life is safe and boring, you are doing it wrong. Can I just push you on that? If it's safe and boring, you're doing it wrong. It's supposed to be danger and adventure because you're in the army of the king. No one ever enlists in the army and is like, wow, I didn't know it would be this uncomfortable or hard, you know? Like just, wow, I thought it'd be safer. No, your life is meant to be moving, advancing the kingdom of God. You're supposed to look different than your neighbors, do you? Is there anything in your life you're doing, any places you're going? That's what go would imply. You're actually going someplace. Is there any place you're going that they find odd? Are you going anywhere they wouldn't go? Are you being around people that they wouldn't be around? In Deuteronomy 10, God says this, "For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God." That means like the king, you know, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality nor takes a bribe. He administers justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing. Therefore, love the stranger. Guess what will happen if you start loving strangers? You will become strange. It's not normal to be around strangers. It's not normal to go to people who have needs. It's not normal to hang around the poor, the oppressed, and the needy. But Jesus said, go. One of my earliest faith heroes was a man named Jim Elliott. He was a missionary in the 1950s, went to an unreached people group in Ecuador. He made contact with them, started establishing friendships, and then tragically, he was actually brutally murdered by the people he was trying to reach. And he knew this was a possibility before he went. Now, years later, his wife, Elizabeth, published a lot of his writings and journals, which are just spectacular. And I want to read you this little bit from what he said. He said, "We are so utterly ordinary, so commonplace. While we profess to know a power the 20th century does not reckon with, but we are harmless and therefore unharmed. We are spiritual pacifists, non-militants, conscientious objectors in this battle to the death with principalities and powers in high places. We are sideliners, coaching and criticizing the real wrestlers while content to sit by and leave the enemies of God unchallenged. The world cannot hate us. We are too much like its own. Oh, that God would make us dangerous. Oh, that God would make us dangerous." If you want to know the vision of Crossroads as it relates to We Go, it's that, man, oh, that God would make us dangerous. Oh, the principalities and powers would shake when we show up. Oh, that they would say, not Crossroads, oh no. We want to be dangerous. See, but your enemy, he doesn't want you to know any of this. He doesn't want you to know this at all. He wants you to think that you coming to church and watching church equals you doing church and being the church. That's what he wants you to think. It's a trick. He's been running it for literally hundreds and hundreds of years. That's what he wants you to think. And if you fall for that lie, you'll become the thing that Jim Elliott called out, the sideliner. Any Bengals fans in here? Bengals fans? Browns fans, I don't want to talk to you. We are not in a good place, you and I. I don't want to talk to you. Bengals fans, though. I have this habit of when I talk about the Bengals, I use the word we. You know, I'll say, hey, I know we had an off week last week, even though I didn't play in the game. We had an off week, but I believe we are going to beat the Ravens today. Who day? You know? Say that. We. Now, I've never played a down of football in my life. That'd be a bad idea for me. I'm not really built for football. More like a jockey kind of build, you know? Not only football. Never played it down. I say, wait, why? Because of what I call the Sunday myth. And the Sunday myth affects football watchers and church watchers. We think that watching makes us part of the team. But please hear clearly, you watching church no more makes you a Christ follower than you watching football makes you a football player. They have nothing to do with each other. Nothing. And I know it can be confusing. You know, we get you in this room, and it's a comfortable place, and it's nice, and it's clean, and we give you coffee and a comfortable seat. And if you're watching online, we have all the lights, and we have that cool sliding camera thing that follows us on this, all that stuff, right? And so it's like, oh, the goal must be comfortable. No. All the comfortable stuff, I'm going to let you in on a secret, is just to woo you in here so we can get you here and then fire you up to go. That's the only point. It's just to go. There's a dividing line and a choice you're going to have to make in your life. You can choose to aim for a safe life or an impactful life. You can't have both. See, the call of the king demands that you embrace danger, difficulty, demands that you get okay with being uncomfortable, because that's what happens when you go. It can be near or far, by the way. Not long after he said that great commission of go to all nations, Jesus kind of doubled down on it and described it in slightly different terms, same exact idea in Acts 1:8. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. In your town, in your city, in your nation, and to the ends of the earth. You don't have to get on a plane to go. You can, that's great, but you can actually just go right around the corner. But every single time, I just want you to know there's a line you're going to have to cross. Some alarm bell is going to go off in your head and say, this isn't safe. I don't know if I should. It's too dangerous. Some alarm bell is going to go off and say, that's too difficult. Man, what a lot of effort. I just came. Alarm bell is going to go off and just go, I'm just not comfortable here. And you're going to have to fight through that if you want to have a life of impact. I've gone so many places that are dangerous, difficult, and really uncomfortable for me to be around. And I've seen God move. Dangerous places. Places that people said, it's too dangerous. You can't go there. I went to South Africa at the height of the AIDS epidemic. I had people say, is that a good idea? Couldn't you catch HIV? Well, yeah, probably could. Been in Nicaragua twice. I don't know if you know this. They have a horrible dictatorship of a government. I walked through an anti-America demonstration just right down the middle of it. Didn't even know. Wasn't paying attention. Okay? You walk right through the middle. Is that dangerous? Yeah, probably. Went to India to try to love some of the girls who were on the street in the red light district of Sonaguchi, where armed guards with guns were watching us. Was that dangerous? Yeah, probably. One of the more dangerous places I've been is just a few miles from here. Went to help out and serve at the ministry that my friends Larry and Patsy Plum run. They went to the police in Cincinnati and said, what are the most dangerous streets in our city? And the police were like, well, why would you want to know that? Oh, because we want to buy a house and move there. And they did it almost 10 years ago. That's called going. And see, if you talk to Larry and Patsy, safe wasn't in the equation. Should we go and where do we go? Safe wasn't part of it. Comfortable wasn't part of it. How difficult is it going to be? That wasn't part of the equation. You cannot have a safe life and an impactful life. You're going to have to pick one. Now, Crossroads, the work that we take on is not safe. It's also not part of our decision-making criteria. We take on dangerous stuff. Some of the more dangerous work that we do is on the other side of the world, in India and Nepal. It's to help rescue children who are trafficked into forced sex slavery, oftentimes by their own families. Very, very dangerous work. And if you're in a room, you're actually right now going to watch a video from one of our partners describing some of this dangerous work. And if you're online, you're not going to get to see this video. And I want to be really clear as to why. It's because the Indian government is cracking down on religious nonprofits in and around their country. And if this video were to get in the wrong hands, not only could the work be jeopardized, but lives could be jeopardized. And so if you're watching online, hang tight, top off your coffee, and come right back. If you're in rooms, check out Juwan's story. Incredible partner. Incredible. Did you catch the turning point and the dividing line in that story? So people told us if we went to this village, if we said yes to going, whom shall I send? Who will go for us? If we said yes to that, we would die. And what was his response? Well, we got to try. That's the attitude of men and women who have always advanced the kingdom of God forward. That's the only option. If you want to have a life of impact and push the kingdom forward, you have to have that same exact mindset. You cannot play it safe. As a church, we will not play it safe. We'll go after the giants in our world, the giants. And it might seem like, oh, well, that makes sense because we're such a giant church. And we are a very giant church. We're a giant church. There's tens of thousands of people. You might be in a room where you're like, oh my gosh, there's only 100 people here. Or maybe in a room of 1,000 people and you think this is the size of Christ. No, it's a big church by church standards. But please don't be deceived. In light of the problems that we're trying to solve, ending sex slavery in an entire nation, the largest one on the planet, India, we're not Goliath, we're David. We're itty bitty. We're this big. Tiny. But do you know that small things can take down big ones? How? Force. That's how. Not the force. Some Star Wars fan got very excited for a second. You were like, I knew Brian Tone would never talk about Star Wars, but yes, here we go. No, I'm not. Not the force. 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 Maybe it's been a minute since you took physics. Force has an equation. It's a law of the universe written by God. Force is mass times acceleration. Mass means like how many people, how much of us can you stick together? How many can we collect together? And then acceleration is increasing velocity in a given direction. Can you get us all together and then aim us at the right spot? And when that happens, friends, a very small object can be shot out of something like a slingshot and kill a giant. That's how it works. See, what God's looking for is more men and women who will raise their hands and say, I want to be a man, I want to be a woman of force. Take down the kingdom of darkness, to attack it. There's a verse in the Bible that has been, the last decade or so, re-examined. Its traditional translation has been re-looked at. And I'm going to read you how it's been translated up until this point. Matthew 11:12, it says, from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. That paints the picture of like the kingdom of heaven is under attack, and these bad people are coming, and they're just not agreeing with our morals anymore, and they're just making it hard to be a Christian, and it's pretty hard right now. That's how it sounds. Kingdom of heaven, we're losing. And I think we have an enemy who wants us to believe that. Who wants us to go, man, culture's turned against us. Time to just pack it in, you know. Let's just build walls around you. Let's make a fortress. And many churches are doing this. There was a book that came out a number of years ago called The Benedict Option that promoted this. It said, hey, the best thing we can do is a monastic movement. Let's retreat from culture and build walls to preserve Christianity. That's what we'll do. If we did that, friends, it would kill it. Because Christianity is not about being behind walls. It's not a fortress. And we will never be a fortress church. It's not building walls, it's building bridges. It's going where no one else will go. That's the call of God. The second we stop that, we've lost it. Now, the new translation is interesting. People are looking at this, and I say new, and really I would argue that it's actually the old one. It's the original one. See, if you actually go back to the Greek, and you look at what these words mean. The word suffer violence is the Greek word biadzo, which actually means to apply force. Not suffer violence, you apply force. And the violent who are taking it by force, that word is biaspheis, which actually means the strong or the forceful. So a much better reading, I would say the original one sounds like this, Matthew 11:12. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been forcefully advancing, and forceful men, forceful women lay hold of it. Now this interpretation, not just the language fits this, but I'd say the whole context of the Bible fits this. The kingdom of God has always exclusively advanced by force. When the Israelites come up to the Jordan River and their promised land's on the other side, which is occupied territory, by the way, they don't cross the Jordan, step on the shore, and all of the people in the promised land go, oh, we're so glad you're here. Take our house. have my sheep and my goats or whatever. It's not how it goes. They have to use force. The kingdom's always advanced by force. It's always a battle. Every single time, every front we've ever tackled is a battle. We stand on stages like this, or you watch videos, and we say some stats, and I'll say some stats even yet to come that I hope will be really encouraging to you. But we say these stats, and the problem with just saying them is you miss the battle part of it. None of them have come easy. One of the classic and I think important to remember war stories in our church is a story of the CityLink Center. 20 years ago, we had this vision. And we said, what if we actually took this kingdom of God thing seriously? What if we took it serious to care for the poor, the oppressed, and the needy in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, ends of the earth, in the cities where we are? And so we started to work on this center aimed at ending generational poverty. And it was a fight. It was a battle. People hated it, picketed it. I remember I was the producer in this room helping make services, and we had picketers out on the corner. It was like, how do we deal with that? Do we stop service? Like, what do we? It was crazy. Crazy. Everything's been a battle. But see, what we're after when we have these battles, it's not new. It's not like we're the first ones to ever face it. This has always been the church. See, our vision for the CityLink Center, in part, was inspired by what we saw happen in Rome 1,700 years ago. Do you know that 1,700 years ago, the Christians were so good at caring for the poor, the oppressed, and the needy, so good at going, so good at saying, here I am, Lord, send me, so good at that, that it pissed off the Roman emperor? Seriously, he wrote a letter about it. Here's a part of it. He said this, atheism, or Christianity, because he called it atheism because they didn't believe in the Roman gods, Christianity has been specially advanced through the loving service rendered to strangers and through their care for the burial of the dead. It's a scandal that there's not a single Jew who's a beggar and that the godless Galileans, that's Jesus's area, care not only for their own poor, but for ours as well, while those who belong to us look in vain for the help that we should render them. That this has always been the church. This isn't new. We're not inventing something that hasn't been here. Like I said, this vision series, it's not stuff that's like, oh my gosh, we just thought of this in the year 2023. Wow, pretty cool. No, it's the stuff he's called every believer to all the time, every time. CityLink Center, by the way, has been open for a while now, and it has helped. I'm so incredibly happy to tell you, 5,000 people, 5,000 clients have gone through its doors. And it's not a quick thing. It's not a step in, check in, hour conversation. We're talking weeks and weeks and months and months and months of hard work. Now that 5,000 is incredible. I want you to think about what that means. Generational poverty. Not just 5,000 individuals, but their kids and those kids' kids and those kids' kids. What will 5,000 mean 500 years from now? Imagine that. That's the generational impact that we're having. Now, how has that happened? Force. Men and women of force. Do you know that Crossroads volunteers have given 45,000 hours to CityLink over the last time period? That's 100 hours a week, every week, for 10 straight years. That is force. We don't sit in rooms and just pray, God, help the poor. No, you go and you do something about it. And then you keep doing something about it. It's always force. God is looking for men and women of force. I think if God had a prayer for his kids, so to speak, I think his prayer would be that we would step into our destiny to be men and women of force. Parents, what's your prayer for your kids? What's your prayer? Well, I know one of them. It's that they would move out someday, right? Of course. Of course. I'll tell you what I pray for my kids. I pray that my kids would become men and women of force. I have prayed since they were this big, first born, just come out, every one of them, that God would use them to reach millions of people. That millions of people who are poor, oppressed, and needy would know God and have salvation, would find their needs met through my kids. Millions of them. Do you know what I never pray for them? I do not pray that they'll have a safe life. I don't pray that. Why would I curse them with that? Why would I curse them with a safe, comfortable, boring life? But I think that's our vision often for life. How can I make it more safe? How can I make it more comfortable? How can I make it more predictable? But the further we go in that direction, the further we get away from what God's call is. Do you know that your Father has already given you safety and security guaranteed for eternity? He did that. That's the we run part. You have a place at his table forever. But he's given you safety so you don't have to seek it. He's made you secure so that you can be dangerous. That's your father, the king. Will you go? I think the reason our church has been potent for 27 years and counting is that we're full of people who just go, full of them. We have the stories, we have the battle scars to prove it. There's some more things just on our history of going. Do you know that we've been going to Nicaragua for about 10 years now? We've sent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people down to Nicaragua to serve. We as a church, all of us individually as families, have sponsored 15,000 kids in Nicaragua who are getting access to healthcare and education in the Bible through us every single day. Do you know how much money that represents? Yeah, that's amazing. We should, yeah, absolutely. Do you know how much money that represents coming out of our bank accounts to them? $20 million. Do you realize that? Again, in the face of the world, what, $20 million is not that much, but us together moving with force, we're taking down a giant called poverty in a country so far away from us. Prison ministry, through the volunteers that have gone into prison. You want to talk about dangerous, you want to talk about uncomfortable, you want to talk about difficult, go to prison. And did you notice that Jesus specifically calls out going to prisons? Again and again and again, close to the heart of God. Do you know that 61,000 inmates have watched the Crossroads service and heard how they matter because of the volunteers who have gone to them? 61,000 inmates. Crazy, crazy. One more mind-blowing number for you. We'll keep going, one more. India, Nepal, we've been working on that for a very long time. And this is not just exclusively from our effort or work, but the work that we get to partner with. Our partners have rescued or prevented the trafficking of 44,000 children. 44,000. Friends, the kingdom of heaven is not suffering violence. These times aren't woe is us. These times are let's get armed up and let's go out because it's working. That's the times that you and I live in. It is working, but it only works. It only works if you say, I'll go. It only works. It only works if when the king says, whom shall I send and who will go for us, you raise your hand. Your hand. At the end of his life, literally just days before he was crucified, Jesus told a parable about a king and the consequences of that king with his servants, his subjects, and whether or not they said, yes, Lord, here I am, send me or send someone else. And I'm going to read you this whole parable. This is Matthew 25. Then the king will say to those on his right, the king, come, you who are blessed by my father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. And they look around, they're like, when did we do that exactly? When did we do that? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. And they're like, whoa, mind-blowing. And then sweet peace and love, Jesus, you know, just so kind, just so comforting. Sometimes he doesn't know when to stop. Like that would have been kind of a cool, like in the parable right there. But he kept going. He said this. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison and you did not look after me. And they'll also answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and didn't help you? When did that happen? Oh no. He replied, truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. He draws the line. And to be clear, the line isn't a salvation line. If you're like, that sounds the opposite of last week we run, the Father who just runs to us and adopts us no matter what we've done. Let me be really, really clear. This isn't about earning righteousness. This is about revealing it. Have you spent time with the Father? Have you been around his table? Because if you have, the heart of the king would grow in you, and the courage to go and the heart to go would naturally be flowing out of you. You couldn't possibly stop it. I got a new piece of artwork for my office about, 3 or 4 months ago, something like that. It's these tree rings, And it's an artist who takes like slices of trees and he dips them in ink and just stamps it. And this tree, I really wanted this one because this tree is over 300 years old. And I wanted, when I look up from my desk, to look at that. Why? Because I don't want Crossroads to be a one generation movement. You know, flash in the pan. It was here. Do you remember that thing? Ah, kinda. I don't know. You know? We want it to be that. We want it to be a movement that continues for hundreds of years, for dozens of generations. And so I keep that there to remind myself of what we're working, what we're building for is bigger than any of us. And someday, it's likely our doors will close. It's likely, even with that idea, even with that effort, it's likely that someday it'll end. Someday the building that you're in, somebody will come to the doors and they'll put a chain through the door handles and they'll put a lock on it. It's likely the stream you're watching will go blank and never come up again. And when that happens, on that day, I want our cities to mourn. I want our nations to mourn. I want our world to mourn, to go, oh no, Crossroads is gone. What are we going to do? Why? Because we mattered. Because we tackled the problems no one else would tackle. We went to the people no one else would go to. That's why. That's the vision of this place. That's the heartbeat. If what you're looking for is a safe church that will let you stay comfortable, this is not it. You're going to want to find a different one. But if you're willing to be pushed, if you're willing to go, if you're willing to get uncomfortable, man, there's a seat at the table for you. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter whether you're qualified. This isn't about that. It's about whether you'll go. It's inaction or action. That's the dividing line. That's it. And by the way, this isn't a hero complex. If anything's sounding that way to you, oh man, what a big high and mighty kind of idea Crossroads must have. Hero complex. No, because we don't go as the heroic rich. We go as the called poor. See, God doesn't have a history of using the strong, impressive people to go accomplish his purposes. He seems to prefer the weak, insignificant, and flawed ones. That's who he tends to use. And that's us. We go as the called poor. Poor how? Poor in spirit. Low in hope. Low in faith. Lacking. But friends, I just want you to know, when you go, the most amazing thing happens. When you go, you get faith. You get a blessing you can't get any other way. James 2:5 says, listen, my beloved brothers, has not God chosen those who are poor in the world to be rich in faith? Hasn't God chosen them? See, when you go, you get faith. So are you low on it? A simple solution, go. When you do it, something unlocks. The book of Isaiah ends in kind of this parallel. In the beginning, God says, who will go? And Isaiah says, here I am. At the end, God responds to the people who said, I'll go. And he says, here I am. Something unlocks and breaks over your life. Listen to these words. Is this not the fast that I have chosen? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him and not hide your flesh, hide yourself from your own flesh. Then, your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, here I am. Here I am. There's more for you, man. There's more for you. You can get it if you go. I wish that we could get us all on a plane and send us over. We're not going to do that right now. We're going to do something that's more like a reverse go trip. If we could, we would have taken all of the kids in India and Nepal, we would have got them on planes and we got them here. And for lots of different reasons, that's just impossible. So instead, what we did is we sent a crew to capture something they wanted to give to you. It's a blessing. It's a blessing meant to inspire courage in you, to remind you that your Father is with you. He's keeping you safe, so that you can be dangerous. They're going to sing these songs, these words over you. These words come from number 6. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace.